what are we going to be doing in this second half of Dialogue Conspiracy?
I'm
going to
jump around. We move kind of slow on the letters, and I'm in a lazy mood. I've been doing a lot of riding and work around the house. I'm tired today. We'll go into the trial of Brammer. The judge is going to order psychiatric tests for Arthur Brammer to decide whether he can stand trial for shooting Governor Wallace. This is another trick the U.S. government uses. There is no indication that Arthur Brammer had any mental deficiency at all when he shot Wallace. We know he did it for a reason, and the idea that he is psychiatrically damaged, any person who shoots another person at that moment has something wrong with him. But Brammer held employment for 3 years at the Milwaukee Club. They've never gone into the source of contacts that he had in the Milwaukee Club. In the last 2 weeks, the FBI has closed the case. They never went into that suspect in Maryland that was identical to the description of the man seen with Brammer up in Milwaukee. We don't know what floor he was at the Waldorf Astoria, or who he was with, or in Canada. They have not said he was alone there. They just haven't gone into it. But all of a sudden, they have decided they're going to check him out, the public defender, to see whether he would be able to competent to stand trial. They did this with Charles Watson at the time that Manson was tried in Los Angeles. They said he arrived in a fetal position and wasted a lot of weight, and the doctors and nurses at the jail at the hospital knew that he was faking it when they weren't looking. He talked to everybody. They didn't want to link the name Watson to Manson because Manson was built up as the big old hippie type. So the whole thing was built around Manson, and they didn't want to associate the trial with Watson because Watson was the man who did the killing. So they're going to do a little test to see if he could stand trial, which is so disgusting. But the system, the methods used by these people have been used over again, and they work. And as long as you people out there don't get your heads together about some of this and begin writing letters or making notes of what is wrong, the system will perpetuate itself. They've got a blueprint, and it's working, and it's very depressing for me how many things have, and I really get tired of watching them do it over again. There's a book review a few weeks ago of this new book by Gerald Frank, on the Martin Luther King murder. It's a terrible book. It's a complete cover-up and whitewash. The contrast between that and Harold Weisberg's frame-up is so great. But there's been about $1 million budget on advertising Frank's book because, of course, he says there's no conspiracy. But one of the points Frank made in the book was they asked him some questions and about the fact that James Ray didn't have a trial. And he said that he knew that the Memphis prosecuting team would be accused of making a deal. It would leave a bad impression if James Earl Ray didn't have a trial. I'm reading in quotes. This is actually what Gerald Frank said. But they weighed the alternative carefully and concluded that a full-dress trial might have been more disastrous, the result, if only because of the possibility that a single jury might cause a mistrial. Now, they don't want to take a chance. Now the Supreme Court has passed that law that a single jury would, the man would still be convicted, but that law wasn't in effect. You see, the Nixon team worked so fast that when they have these problems, like these political patsies sitting in jail, they have to circumvent all other types of justice and say to James Ray, you can't have a trial. So his excuse was that some one person in that group may find him innocent. And that's pretty disgusting, I think. And so now they're deciding whether Brammer, who had no indication of a mental problem at all at any time in his life, is going to stand trial. James Earl Ray, I was looking up one of my notebooks for some information on James Ray, and I came across an article, April the 2nd, 1969, and it was written by, it's about Arthur Haynes, the attorney who was representing James Ray before Ray had his lawyer switched at the last minute, because Ray wanted to say he was innocent. The night before the trial, they switched it to Mr. Percy Foreman from Houston, Texas, who came in and made the deal for James Ray to go to jail. But at the time that Haynes was on the trial, he said a 30.06 caliber deer rifle found near the murder scene was not the rifle used to kill Dr. King. He says the FBI knew it. Mr. Haynes was a former agent for the FBI, and he examined the bullet recovered from Dr. King's body, and the bullet had enough markings on it to be traced to the actual murder weapon, and a six-year-old kid could have found it, he said. Ballistics experts of the FBI said the rifle bullet that struck Dr. King in the right jaw and severed his spinal cord could have been fired from the abandoned rifle Ray dropped. Mr. Haynes said that Ray and a contact had taken that rifle that he had to Memphis to show to some anti-Castro Cuban exiles. And there was a contact there with other people. He was going to sell the rifle, and they were interested in buying rifles. And that Ray had a contact with this particular group in Birmingham, too. But he also said that when he went to see James Earl Ray, Mr. Haynes said that Ray's cell in Shelby County in Memphis had been constantly monitored by closed-circuit television, and that he and Ray had to lie on the cell of the floor to talk so that those watching couldn't read their lips. You know, when Jack Ruby and James Ray and all these alleged assassins get in a jail cell, they are photographed from every angle. They're like animals in a cage with all these monitors, so that the lawyer and ex-FBI man had to lie on the floor, you know, and face each other so that the camera couldn't see their lips. And then the news media comes along and tells you that James Ray and Sir Adam Bramer and Oswald wanted a place in history. They wanted to be famous. If they wanted to be famous, they would face the camera and open their lips and say, I did it. You know, they'd really be famous. But in order to prove their innocence and get a lawyer to take the case because it's a conspiracy, they lie on the floor of the cell with their back to the camera to have a communication. And then that same lawyer can't carry the case. The federal government orders him out and brings in Percy Forman. And James Ray has to be sent off to jail without a trial. Now that's the way, there are a lot of indications that there's conspiracies in this country. And I think once in a while it's good to go over a few of these old articles that happened. A lot of people listening don't even remember that these things came out. This is from the New York Times. The FBI saying that a six-year-old kid could have traced the rifle because he saw the bullet and it did not come from the rifle that was found in the rooming house that James Ray was supposed to have stayed at. So because of the trial of Bramer coming up, where they think he's not sane enough, they're going to decide if he's sane enough to stand trial, then I tie that in for you to the Gerald Frank remarks in the book that they had to have no trial in Memphis for James Earl Ray and killing Martin Luther King, because one person may have found him innocent, then he'd be free and on his way. And then I show you from an article by an FBI man. I mean, this isn't some person challenging the FBI who's had no experience with ballistics. This is an FBI man who can't even talk with his client, who would like to be innocent in that court of law, who maybe could show the jury that he did not kill Martin Luther King at all. That's why he can't have a trial. Well, Time magazine came in with their usual cover stories. We could do another 3 or 4 hours on the Wallace show, but to wind up the Wallace killing so that you can all get it out of your minds, Life magazine and Time had two more summaries, but Time had its essay, Did America Shoot Wallace? This was their last essay. And the author, Edwin Warner, goes into all the old cover stories that they used from Oswald on up through Sirhan and James Ray and the killing of Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and now for George Wallace. The same adjectives that I cross-filed and researched for 8 years I traced to the Galen operation, to the Nazi spies in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, are summed up once again in June 12, 1972. Lest you forget them, this total brainwashing process goes on. And the article is, Did America Shoot Wallace? And it goes in to the fact that the individualism of American assassins is what Europeans and some Americans don't understand, that our political assassins are different than anybody else's. It's called the individualism. The same thing happens always. You get a shift of power, of electoral power, and you change, the government changes hands, and the process of voting changes hands. But he calls it the individualism, and then he goes again into Lee Harvey Oswald, the pathetic loner, mentally disturbed, and then they quote their authorities. Out come all the authorities, a John Spiegel from Brandeis University, who says these assassins live in fantasy worlds with no real contact with their intended victim. Well, you don't have to be a director of Lemberg's Center for Study of Violence at Brandeis to know that most people who assassinate a president or a king don't socialize with that person. They don't sit at their table or eat with them anyway. You don't have to be the director of Lemberg Center. Again, you're using a Jewish university, Brandeis University. Louis Neiser was used, Jack Ruby was used. The worst racists and haters in the world seem to find Jews to mouth their crimes to cover them up, and they must get a perfectly wonderful delight. They get a again like John Spiegel from Brandeis University talking about people who lived in fantasy worlds. Bremer didn't live in a fantasy world. He worked at the Milwaukee Club. We don't even know what the membership is there. Who attends that place? There's no fantasy world at the Waldorf Astoria or traveling the way he's doing and staying at the Sheraton Plaza, you know, hotels and up at Canada Resort hotels. He has a real purpose in what he's doing. That's not a misdirected energy. So they get an expert to say this man prefers to strike down the charismatic leader of an aroused constituency, someone who brings excitement in politics. They're killing these people not because they bring excitement in politics, but because they're competing with Richard Nixon. It's just that simple. They're opposing Nixon's votes. They're splitting his vote, Wallace's, with the anti-busing. And Bobby Kennedy was taking the election away from Nixon. John Kennedy took it away from Nixon. They're not bringing excitement to politics. They're ending politics. But they use these authorities and quote the Time magazine. And I'm going at great length to show you the adjectives that Time has a necessity to repeat. After every killing, they pull out this same story. I mean, this wasn't after the John Kennedy murder. This is this month. You know, right now they're printing this stuff, that these assassins are rootless. They're removed from geographical and moral roots, and they're in lonely rooming houses. These men are rootless because they're on assignment. They're meeting people. They're exchanging money. James Ray's chronology of how he traveled, who handed him money each place, the fact that King had to be killed in an election year. He knew what he was doing. Oswald was rootless. He was in the Marines 3 years. He traveled in Japan and Philippines, and then he gets an assignment. He goes to Russia. As an agent, he got an assignment to go to New Orleans, then Mexico, and back to Texas. That was the nature of his job. It isn't that he wants to be rootless. A man in the military is rootless because that's the nature of being in the military. It isn't that you don't have a belonging in your community. You know, children whose parents are in the military full-time that move around are rootless. That's the nature of the assignment. It's that they live in fantasy worlds of life and death where everything is unreal. Well, if killing candidates and being paid to kill is unreal, it's true that they live in a world of unreality. But Richard Helms and J. Edgar Hoover or Patrick Gray or Richard Nixon live in a totally unreal world too. And speaking about unrealities, they asked Richard Nixon's press secretary this week why he didn't have news conferences anymore, why he didn't meet people. And Richard Nixon's answer, through Mr. Ehrlichman, is because the press asked dumb questions. This country is so torn with problems. And Nixon says he won't meet the press because they're asking him dumb questions. They want to know what's happening to the ghettos, the schools, the mentally disturbed, the old age, the crippled. What's happening to our cities, transportation, pollution. You're walking on the lakes, practically. You can strike a match on them and start a fire.
Ehrlichman says that newsmen are like insecure young ladies. They keep asking us if we love them.
Yeah, he said, if you don't want to know, don't ask. I mean, this man is a totally insane person, and he's only there because you allow him to be there. If he were tried for murder...
Associated Press reported this... this past Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, Nixon, they asked the newsman and Nixon what he thought about the bias of Negroes not being allowed in private clubs. And he said, well, the barrier has to be done through a broader base, like through jobs. The people have to work side by side. Does he mean at the cotton picking level? You know, a man who wants to go into a private club in Washington and have a beer, he's already worked his way up in the system, and he still can't get in. He's working side by side, the top blacks of the country, the military, and they still can't get in. He's saying they have to work side by side and then work their way up into the clubs. We'll try to get through the job barrier. The Mexican-Americans, the Chicanos that were working up at San Jose. The colleges were fired this last week, which was a scandal. They're trying to teach dual languages and helping people through early double language training to get more opportunities and jobs. The three men that were doing a fantastic job were suddenly fired. And the university up there says, oh, that's not racism. You know, that was a disgusting thing that's being investigated. The job opportunities are going down again for blacks. And Nixon says the club thing isn't the thing. It's a job-to-job basis. All of the national money, the big hunk of the budget, is going to aerospace. Men like Howard Hughes won't hire one black, and he is the richest man from the entire defense industry in the United States or the world. And he doesn't even hire black. He doesn't have people wait on who have black buttons on their clothes. You know, they have to dress all white. You know, Howard Hughes employs through his huge aerospace and war machinery people that don't even wear black shoelaces. And Nixon says they should work side by side. All those government contracts at Bell Aerospace, I'm sure Dornberger has a lot of black people shuffling through Bell Aerospace building choppers.
Yeah, it's when we talk about comments like that, it makes you wonder whether you should bother with the rest of the program.
It's depressing. It's really depressing. You know,
the press asks dumb questions.
The press asks dumb questions. You know, it's a downer this week. Usually I come in feeling really good, but things are coming along pretty bad. You know, there's another thing, the newsmen, there's a group in Congress and that want to stop President Nixon from being on television, that breaking the balance of the executive and the legislative branches. And there is a demand that the Senator Harold Hughes of Iowa filed a complaint. Now people say to me, what can I read, what can I do? There's two things you can do in response to this article that was in the paper this week. Hughes is asking that Richard Nixon not have so much time on television. He's had more than all four other presidents combined. He is just like Adolf Hitler. He has had the free television time since his inauguration on 69 occasions, and on 37 of these it was prime time, and 11 of them were about the war in Indonesia. And Hughes asked people to sign petitions against the war in Indonesia and wanted to show the Congress, the people who got these letters in Congress against the war should have time on television to pre-show the letters or the protests against Indonesia. If the president's been on 69 occasions, the people who write to Congress never get their wishes shown on the television media, that there's another side. And the media turned down the request for the Federal Communication Commission, turned down the request of Harold Hughes. He says, no, you can't have this time. And Hughes claims that Congress is witnessing a diminution of its powers because of the excessive exercise of executive power. Now, Richard Nixon and company, the people that put him into office, know what propaganda and advertising is. He gets on the air and he says the war will be over in Vietnam. He is absolutely clobbering those people, mashing them down, and he's sending Kissinger now on some more little peace missions. You see, he will temporarily stop. When Hitler won in office in 1933 in Germany, he didn't announce, if I am elected president, I will invade Poland, Yugoslavia, Romania, France, Italy, North Africa, and demolish Soviet Union and enslave 40 million people and kill 50 million others. Those were his blueprints. He didn't announce that in 1933. Hitler said, when I'm elected, I will continue the cabinet and the chancellery the way it was before. Richard Nixon talks peace. He doesn't intend to have peace, and I can see that in the news. What I want to say is you can write to Senator Harold Hughes. Or you could write, I don't know, how do you write to the Federal Communications? They're such faceless people. How do you do this, Phil?
Well, you can write to any one of the commissioners, care of the Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C. Nicholas Johnson is one of the more, he's the maverick on the FCC, and he's the one that's usually the most willing to listen to what might be considered far-off ideas or unpopular ideas. Commissioner Nicholas Johnson, Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C.
Okay, write to Senator Hughes and say we appreciate your effort. And there's another thing that I do. My own lifestyle is consistent with what I believe or do, and I think that more people are going to have to swing the things that they don't like. They're going to have to give them up and swing into a different lifestyle, because it's too schizophrenic to say one thing and live another. It's like people I know who always were going to Vegas for easy vacations, and it was quick, and the shows used to be cheap. And I said, no, it is the center of the mafia, syndicated crime, organized crime, and skimming money, and crime imports narcotics, which enslaves people, and I will never set foot into Vegas. The same attitude I have about Richard Nixon. I know so much about him from my research that I will not watch him. I don't even watch any of the television. I turn it off. I read newspapers and articles, and I can clip them, put them side by side, but he's been on 69 times, and I'm proud to say I only watched one speech. A friend of mine called me and told me to watch him at a particular time. There was one speech he gave, and I watched the one, it was not too long ago, maybe when he came home from China, the one where he said that from Hong Kong that he was going to allow each nation to determine its own destiny. And I knew that was a lie. I knew I didn't have to ever watch him again because, as we mentioned last week, he isn't going to allow the people in each country to have the oil in their country, to run their country so that they can have the homes and health plans and schools and hospitals and education and fair wages for their labor, get them out of slavery and repression and concentration camps and tortures like in Brazil and Greece and Venezuela. Richard Nixon doesn't mean that. So if he's been on television 69 times, I've only watched him once. That's a pretty good record. And I don't watch any of his programs or any of the other television programs. And maybe if you boycott the federal communications and say, because we the people can't get men like Senator Hughes on to show our wishes about the war or torture or napalm, we won't watch any television. That is the way to stop boycotting. Start boycotting the television entirely as a medium. I think that's right, because just like I boycott certain radio stations that give pablum-fed lies and turned on to the FM stations, just don't watch any television because the federal communication doesn't represent you. That means you don't watch I Love Lucy or any special, even their documentaries. The best documentary that they can offer is nothing to just reading a good book on the subject and having the facts before you, and then you can pass them on to another person and another person. There's some good movies like, I think of Truman Capote did one on the Glass House, prison problems this year. It was a good movie, but it's nothing like the Tagwood book that's coming out, the Glass House tapes or other books on prison systems. There's a lot of good books, and you read that and you hold it, and then you can share it with your friends. And I don't think that you should watch any television. I think you should boycott the television. Well, we've jumped around a lot today because there's a lot of things coming out in the news. I have isolated articles I'd like to share with you. Dialogue Assassination is on every week to try to take events of the week and point out certain things that are happening.
Conspiracy. Dialogue Conspiracy.
Yeah.
You're reading from an old script, right?
No, I'm so used to saying Dialogue Assassination because in order to have a conspiracy, you do murder people.
You have
bodies.
You have to have the assassination to go along with it.
They all go together, the conspiracy and the assassination. But hopefully
first, the assassination or the conspiracy?
The conspiracy. Like when World War I was over, the conspiracy to get back in power and wage World War II was carefully planned. And then, when they knew what they wanted, they began a series of assassinations, which equaled over 400 political people until Hitler was in office. The conspiracy, the idea begins first, then the assassination. So you win, it's conspiracy. That's it. That's what this show is about, to show symptoms of the disease and methods of combating it. And the best tool is education. Read and write letters and begin to take some form of action.